Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a shame that you haven't lost your touch. We wouldn't be in this mess.
This is your mess.
Has this ever happened before, John? Because obviously your knowledge of Bond and the history of Bond is greater than mine. Uh-huh. Were there ever discussions about killing Bond with any previous actor?
No.
Okay.
No.
Great. Let's move on.
Yeah. I think maybe they would have done after Lazenby.
Yeah. Without his consent.
They were very angry with him, so maybe. They just had someone who looks like him walk in a room and then fall down a hole, and Connery come out and go, "Who is that? Who is that imposter?" You weren't following him, were you? He was a very unreliable narrator.
Largely overdubbed, I believe.
Yes, by this man, Inspector Wexford.
Name's Bond, James Bond.
No, you're not. You're Inspector Wexford.
Damn it.
Anyway, follow me on Diamonds Are Forever. See you after the credits. That's what they should have had instead of Where's Blofeld.
Yeah, they should have done. They should have done. But
anyway,
yeah. Anyway,
we're going to be here all day.
Sorry.
So basically, we have a break-in at a lab. I like the way this is directed.
Love
Very
it.
Very nice. Yeah. And they kill Hugh Dennis.
Oh.
Yeah. For all the times he's interrupted on Mock the Week. This is really boring, but I really, really, really like the red lab coat's look. It looks so cool.
I think this whole sequence is terrific.
Yeah,
I really
it's
do.
Brilliant. It's brilliant.
I think David Denchik, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Very good. Very funny.
He's a bit, underutilized in this, or maybe overutilized, or however you feel. But I really like him as an actor. I love him in Tinker Tailor very much.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
The girl with the dragon tattoo on her legs.
Yes.
That's good. So they break in and they steal a weapon. They try and give him smallpox. And there's lots of bullying going on in these government facilities of poor Russian men. But they steal the weapon, Heracles. And what I love about this is Moneypenny runs into M's office and says, "Sir, I've just heard some awful news." And he sits up and goes, "I've seen it." Then he presses a button and we have to wait 10 seconds while this TV awkwardly opens. And I thought, where have you seen it? Because your TV's off. The TV should have been on.
Maybe he thinks that she was referring to something completely different.
So there's an email about your Peter. I've seen it. There's an email about what you and Bond did in Hong Kong. I've seen it.
I've seen it. Let's change the subject.
And then he says it was a gas leak. And she says, "But sir, it was a gas leak." And then he says, "Get us 007. Ah. Bond is now in Jamaica.
Yep.
Where he's just caught a couple of fish. mm-hmm. with his harpoon. Maybe it was him with the harpoon in the opening credits.
Maybe it was.
Mm. Mm. But he finds a cigar. In Die Another Day, when he goes to Cuba, he says, I'm here about the whatever they're called. There's one there. So that's a bit of a Die Another Day callback there.
Okay, yeah.
And then he meets Logan Ash and Felix in the nightclub, and they want his help to find Oropchev, who's the scientist who was kidnapped with magnets. Mm-hmm. And Bond says no, but then he meets Nomi, mm-hmm. who, as you mentioned before, she's now an MI6 agent, pretending to be Jamaican. They go back to his house, and his house, of course, is Ian Fleming's Golden Eye.
Yes!
Mm.
Which I was in, John.
Oh, you didn't go there, did you?
I did. I went there. I visited the set of this movie. I have pictures of me sitting. Yeah, I have pictures of me at the desk where Ian Fleming wrote all his Bond novels.
Wow. Wow.
I could lose a few pounds, I'll be honest, but yeah, it was very very much fun. It's a hell of a place. I wish I could afford to go back there to stay properly, because it's now a resort. You can actually stay.
It's on Airbnb. I looked up how much it costs for a week. £45,000.
Yeah. Perhaps we can get a Patreon going.
I think we should.
Yeah. John and Chris's Golden Eye Adventure. And we go out there.
You and I write a feature about what it's like to live there for a week. Empire pick up the bill. What do you think?
I think Empire would be delighted to pay for that. What did you say? £45,000? Fuck it. We'll throw in 2 weeks. Have a second week.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah.
Why not? But yeah, I went out to Jamaica to see some second unit stuff.
Mm.
And then I was on, we'll get to it later on, but I was on set for a pivotal scene in the movie and up at Pinewood. But I went to Jamaica, which was good for me because I did the set visit purely from selfish air miles point of view.
Yeah.
But also, you know, having great experiences and adventures, because I did all the set visits for, or did the feature rather, for Spectre, which involved trips to Austria and Mexico, but I didn't get to do any of them. Someone else went to those instead. Oh. So I ended up at Pinewood watching Daniel Craig pretend to beat up a security guard. But, you know, listen, all good. Not complaining. It was fine. But yeah, I went to Jamaica, and I'm going to give you a SmirchPod exclusive.
Oh, go on.
The scene I saw being shot, second unit scene I saw being shot, not in the film.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in it?
It was, so after Cuba, when Bond gets the scientist whose name I cannot remember, that's him, that's the one. Mm-hmm. Gets him into Nomi's seaplane. There was a bit of business where Bond was then bobbing around in the water, being chased by cops, and he was in the seaplane, and the cops were shooting at him, and then Bond takes off, and then there's like a stunt where he flies the seaplane through a crane. And
might be in the trailer.
I think it's in the trailer, and I'm pretty sure I wrote it in my feature as well. Which came out weirdly in like 2019.
Yeah.
And I talked about seeing this stunt pilot flying this plane, this really, really precise stunt through a crane at one of the ports out there in Kingston, and not in the film. So they cut, he gets onto the plane, and then the next thing they're in the air. So that whole sequence is excised.
Oh yeah. So Nomi's in GoldenEye. And then she reveals that she's MI6. And then he says, by the way, it's Commander Bond. And I thought, this is your fifth film. And this is the first reference you've made to the fact that you were in the Navy. At no point in any of these films has they ever mentioned that he was Commander Bond.
Maybe he just forgot?
It just made me think of License to Kill. Like, let it go, Commander. I thought, yes! But they don't do that at all in any of these films. So that annoyed me a bit. I know, I'm a dick. But what I like most is that after he speaks to Nomi, Ralph Fiennes is back at M's office. No, Q's office, sorry. And he says, I need to speak to Blofeld. And he goes, oh, you know, there's only one person I'll speak to. He goes, no, I mean the live feed. And then he says, oh, the PM's calling. And I just immediately thought of Boris Johnson. And I started laughing. What's going on with this Heracles?
Oh God, we're all screwed in that case, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Ben Q does his hacking typing, which always irritates me. He says, give me the live feed of Blofeld's jail cell. And it's like... And Blofeld, and then Rory Kinnear, I was going to say Roy, says he's always like this. He says he's as mad as a bag of bees.
He says peas.
Does he say peas?
He says peas. Mad as a bag of peas.
I thought he said bees.
I'm sure he says peas. I'm sure he does. He's a Shakespearean trained actor, John. He will enunciate.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
But I can see Phoebe Waller-Bridge has worked her magic there. I'm just going to say that every time there's a bit of dialogue, because that's what everyone was saying for weeks after that film came out.
I mean, most people were saying mad as a bag of snakes, but in Scripps Doctor World, box of frogs,
yeah,
absolutely. But sack of hammers, you can have all kinds of things, but no, bag of Margot peas. Kidder. I mean, yes, other options are available, obviously.
I am not editing that out. So Bond then rings back Felix and says, I'm in. Because I spoke to him and he wouldn't have anything of what I was saying because he knew I knew what's going on and he wouldn't listen. So I'm in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he goes to Cuba and he meets Paloma. Now, this is the best sequence in the film.
It is.
Yeah, because she is brilliant.
She is. And it feels like she comes into the film, blesses it for 10 minutes and then leaves. Exit stage left. And
well, I think that's something they'd forgotten about with Bond, is that by having a different woman in every film, or a different person in every film, I should say, it freshens it up a bit. When you've got the same people in every film, I mean, with this one, we've got Madeline doing two films. It just feels a bit staid and boring. But as you say, she comes in and just sprinkles magic dust everywhere because she's so fun.
Yeah. She is. She's so vibrant and effervescent, and the sequence is, for my money, the best action sequence in the movie. Then it forgets to be an action movie for about a good solid hour after that.
Yeah.
There's obviously the kind of dust up on Felix's boat, but after that, it's people talking in rooms until they get to Norway.
It's Blofeld's for a long, birthday, long time. Though.
It is Blofeld. Has such a lovely birthday. This is the scene I was on set for, actually.
How is it?
The Blofeld's birthday scene. And so I was under the impression for a long time that this movie had a virus component to it. And whenever I saw the movie, I was thinking, how are they going to do a virus in the time of COVID? There's obviously some sort of sensitivity around that. And when I saw the movie and I saw that it was nanobots and there was a virus that basically has to be armed beforehand, I was like, oh, that's pretty clever. I like that. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I'm all right with that.
It's Trad Bond. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's got this cutting edge style to it as well, which I like.
Yeah. It's also got the fact that Blofeld is... You know, we're watching this lovely party happening, but Blofeld is sat on his own in a cell with a little hat on, watching everything happen through a bionic eye.
Occasionally doing that. Doesn't even get a slice of cake, does he?
No, he doesn't. They can't download cake to an eye, I don't think. No,
they can't. That's never quite explained how he is seeing everything through that eye.
No.
But I do love the setup of it when Rory Kinnear says he's mad as a box of spiders, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they cut to the live feed and it's Blofeld just going, ooh, jibber, 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 wibble, wibble, wibble. I'm mad, I am. So later on when he suddenly goes, well, the author of all my pain, my great brother, James, then they don't smell a rat, do they?
No. No, they should do. So smell a ham.
So on set,
aren't. I watched The French Dispatch a few weeks ago, which I loved.
Yes.
He's in that for about 5 seconds and he doesn't really
Everyone's
do
in that for 5 seconds.
That's true. But he had to have extensive makeup to make him look like he's a bit balding. And I thought, maybe he had a bigger part. I don't know.
Maybe he
did. Just felt a bit odd. I feel like he's lost his way a bit, bless him.
I don't think it's as easy as he just needs to reunite with Quentin Tarantino. But it does seem that every time Quentin Tarantino writes up a part, he wins an Oscar. So maybe he does need to do that.
He's just waiting for Tarantino to make another film. Is he going to make another film or is he quit now?
He is. He's going to make one more film. Yeah. Maybe that'll be the QT All-Stars. Maybe he'll write a part for everybody who's been amazing in one of his films, who's not dead or insane.
Or John Travolta.
Or John Travolta. Oh, bless him.
Who's both.
Poor old JT. Poor old JT.
So this will be the... Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say the... This that scene the birthday party scene is the one I was on set for, and instead of Christoph Waltz reading out the, welcome everybody to my birthday party. It is my 60th birthday. Here is my brother, my great burden, my brother James Bond. It was a bored bloke on the set. He was reading out the lines in a monotone through a microphone. It was really quite something.
Why is the eye on a pillow? Why doesn't it just live in that man's head? Because he can see out of a man's head.
Precisely.
That feels really odd.
Yeah. And surely if they have the technology to do that, why is it just that one guy?
Yeah. Why haven't they all got one?
Yeah. It's
he could have got like when Sky Sports first started. You could like flick between the different people and look through their eyes.
It should have been Chris Kamara, basically what you're saying.
Chris, I hear all of Spectre are dead. Are they, Jeff?
There's been a massacre at Spectre, but who for? Chris Kamara!
How's there, Jeff?
I haven't seen it, Jeff. What's happening? They're all dead, Chris. Are they? Oh, yeah, they've been infected by a nanovirus.
I'm not feeling very well, Jeff.
I'm sitting here thinking to myself, Jeff, I don't want to be killed by a nanovirus at a Spectre birthday party. That's a bit of Charlie Nicholas for you there.
No, I was going to do Paul Merson and say, someone's run off with that Orbachevalov. Orbachevalov.
Good stuff.
So yeah, basically, Orbachev is being... Now, I'm really unclear as to who's doing what here, because Cyclops Man is forcing Orbachev to put Bond's DNA into the nanobot thing, which is then going to put into the air filter, which is going to pump into the room and kill Bond. But he puts all of Spectre into it.
Yes.
And when they pump into the room, Blofeld's like, up yours, you're going to die now. And then everybody around him dies.
Yes.
But I'm like, well, who's... So Safin's done that. But how? Because that bloke... Oh, I'm really confused.
Well, they say later on, Moneypenny says later on that there have been loads of data breaches in, you know, just various security agencies around the world.
Yeah.
And they've lost all kinds of DNA. So presumably Safin, for reasons.
But how? How has he done this? Who is he working for? Where's he got his money from? What?
Again, there are some unanswered questions with Safin, as in everything, basically. Where does he get the money? Because if his parents were killed, there's kind of a suggestion in the film that used to be his father's lair and he's just inherited it.
Yes.
But you're right. How does he bankroll it? Why is he bankrolling it? There's a fairly basic approach to Safin, which is how do you establish your big bad is a big bad by having him kill the previous big bad.
Yes.
Which can be really reductive sometimes. And I think it's a little bit here because when you're watching the film for the first time, you're going, oh my God, this guy has killed all of Spectre. This is wild. He must be an incredibly impressive villain whenever we finally get to meet him. And then he's just some sort of weirdo.
Yeah.
I don't think they quite back it up. It's a shame.
It is a shame.
It's a lovely party as well. And Michael G. Wilson cameo in here.
Yes, yes. Always good to see him
mm-hmm.
in a film, not otherwise. That's a joke. I'd love to meet him. I this was my first instance of my stomach falling a bit. Because remember you mentioned earlier about cleaning the slate so violently. Mm-hmm. When all of Spectre died, I thought, hang on a minute. I know what's happening here. I think something bad's going to happen at the end. But we'll get there.
Oh, okay. you were well ahead of the game.
I had a feeling just because of that Danny Boyle thing that came out, and I remember I've been thinking all along, I've had a feeling in the back of my mind that's where they're going to take it ultimately, and I was sad to be right.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout.
36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Anyway, so Bond and Paloma fight loads of people. There's a good bit here with lots of really good action.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nomi turns up. And takes Orachev for a bit.
Yes.
Obrachev, sorry. And then they take him back, and then he gets him on a plane, and then he flies to a boat. There's a good bit there as well with Paloma saying it's her first mission. I quite enjoyed that.
Yes, and we don't know how true that is, because she seems pretty damn proficient. But I also like there's a little motif that runs through this fight where she and Bond are getting increasingly sozzled.
Yes.
So I counted that she has at least three, I think they both have at least three drinks during the course of this. And it doesn't seem to impair them in any way, but she's so likable in this in this moment. I thought, because it was fairly clear she was on set the day I was there as well, and then they showed me around the Cuba set at Pinewoods. That's all a set. It's tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I saw the trailers for this, it became clear that Paloma was only in the Cuba section, and so I was terrified she was going to get fridged. I was, because she seemed so bright and likable, and so I was glad they didn't. I was glad they didn't, and they left her on the board. But can you leave someone on the board if you're wiping the board clean? Like one of the last things Bond says to her is, you know, do pop back in again, do drop by, you know, do see me again. And it feels like we're not going to get that chance.
Yeah, because she could have been like the new Felix. It would have been quite fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Such a shame. But it best sequence in the movie for me by a mile.
Yeah, there's also a little Quantum of Solace nod there as well, isn't there?
Is there?
Well, only physically. There's a bit where he's grappling with henchmen and they both fall through the floor and the camera follows them.
Yes.
One falls on an object and the other carries on falling. So it looks like exactly the same framing to that awful beginning fight in Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, but just done more proficiently this
just
time.
Just done more proficiently, yeah. So anyway, he runs off with Obrachev and they go meet Felix on a boat. And that's where we discover that Obrachev lets slip that someone's, you know, killed all of Spectre. And Bond's like, oh, well, who? And then it becomes clear that Logan Ash is actually our friend, Logan Ash. I don't know what that means. He's a baddie.
Yeah.
And yeah, then he shoots, as you mentioned earlier, he shoots Felix, manages to lock them both in a bit of the boat that's blown up with a hole in it and water coming in. And then Felix like, oh, I'm not going to make it, buddy. And I thought, oh, no. Yeah, this is, as you mentioned earlier.
Mm.
And Felix dies.
This is Portent of Doom Part 2.
I need to talk about Felix for a moment, though, because Jeffrey Wright, I think Jeffrey Wright has the best voice in the world.
Yeah, he does. One of them, anyway.
One of them. There's a bit in The French Dispatch, which I mentioned earlier, where him and Liev Schreiber are having a conversation, and it should be illegal, because there's these two booming, deep, lovely, velvety voices chatting to one another in this lovely prose and... Yeah, and having watched all of What If with my kids and everything, I just think I love listening to Jeffrey Wright talk, so the fact that he's not going to be in these anymore is a bit sad.
How do you feel about the fact that he wasn't in Skyfall or Spectre, and then they bring him back for this and basically pretend that he and Bond are brothers?
Yeah, I don't like it. Again, we're going to have to pretend that they had loads of missions that we didn't see, but I'd like to have seen them, please.
Yes.
Rather than Spectre.
It's like that moment in that, I believe there was a fourth Indiana Jones movie, but it's like that moment in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull where Indy is being interrogated by Jim from Neighbours and the janitor from Scrubs. And they're talking about all these amazing adventures. Like Jim from Neighbours is talking about all these incredible adventures he's been on with Indy. And I'm thinking, I'd like to see that, please.
Yeah.
Rather than the one we're watching now. Can we see that, please?
Are you looking forward to Indiana Jones 5?
I'm nervous about it for all kinds of reasons. But I trust as much as I can in Jim Mangold.
I really like James Mangold. So that's the only reason that I'm kind of like really into it. If it was like Skip Taylor, who did the Die Hard 5 film, or whatever his name, Skip Woods, sorry. If it was Skip Woods, Indiana Jones 5, I'd be like, maybe not.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too up in it.
I think Mangold's very good, even though I didn't like The Wolverine, but I liked Logan a great deal.
Yeah, The Wolverine's interesting because he was parachuted into that at fairly short notice. So it was Darren Aronofsky was on that for a long time, and then Mangold came in with, I think, maybe a few months ago, maybe a couple of months ago. I wouldn't say that's his film entirely.
Aronofsky's got the best job in Hollywood, doesn't he? Because he gets attached to projects, probably gets paid, and then goes, nah, I'm all right.
I'm good. And then someone else comes in and he's off doing his own little passion projects paid for with the big blockbuster cash. It's not bad. It's a good job. Yeah.
Anyway, so Felix is dead, and then Bond goes back to MI6 and... He meets up with M. There's a good variation on the Bond, James Bond. I really like this. It's a good joke.
Mm-hmm.
Where he goes to reception and says Bond, and the guy looks at him and he says James Bond. Mm-hmm. And then he meets M, and they have a little row.
They do. You know what? I have to say, I like Bond during this section of the film.
Yeah.
Because he is just giving everyone shit, and he is looking upon... He's looking upon all the events in this kind of twinkly-eyed, sardonic manner, which I really like. I think Craig's pretty funny in this movie when he is allowed to be, obviously.
Yeah.
And it makes me wish we'd had more humor from him.
Yeah.
That bit where he's going, is this desk bigger or have you got smaller?
Mm.
To just a little.
I hope you don't mind, but I had to capture a clip. Because there's always a moment in a Ralph Fiennes film where he goes full Leonard Rossiter. And he does this, so I'll just play it now. Hang on.
I had him done.
My God, you're thirsty at the moment.
You have no right to speak to me that way. You have no right to make insinuations about my judgment.
If you've nothing left to give, you are irrelevant. You've done your bit, and we thank you for your service. Again, goodbye.
You are the relevant Miss Jones. Again, we have to go back to Peter Serafinovich there, because if you haven't seen his acting masterclass as Ralph Fiennes as Leonard Rossiter, I would recommend you watch it, because he is Leonard Rossiter.
It is so good. I mean, I think I asked Serafinovich once how he made that leap.
Hmm.
And I don't think he could remember, but the leap between... Because once you see it, you can't unsee it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Like once you get that connection that Ralph Fiennes not only looks a bit like Leonard Rossiter, but sometimes acts like him. It's impossible to escape. Yeah. That's a prime bit of Rossiterine.
And Bond goes all Savile here because he keeps asking if he can get into Belmarsh. and they say to him, "Well, you can't, because there's only one person Blofeld will speak to." And he says, "Who's that?" And then we see Madeline. And she goes to her office and someone says, there's some bloke to see you and he's really
Frank
weird.
Bruno. Yeah. It's the only person. I'm afraid Blofeld will only talk to Frank Bruno.
Frank, I am the author of your pain.
You what?
Have you met my friend Peter?
You know what I mean, Harry.
What? I've made a mistake here. I loved your widow twanky. Madeline gets a visit from Safine. Now this scene I quite like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably in a minority here, but I quite like it. And I'd like more of this. I'd like some more scenes with Safin so I can finally find out what his game is, but we never get them, unfortunately.
We don't.
But he goes to see Madeline and basically says, I want you to kill Blofeld. And then he shows her his box. Not like that. He doesn't bend over and get his bum out. He shows her his box. And that's Bohemian Rhapsody you're thinking of. He shows her his box. And in it is the mask, not the one that makes you go...
not the one that turns green. Into Loki.
Yeah, no, not the one that makes you go... Well, that's a different party. Film entirely. Although, I'd love that if that was the villain in this film. yeah, so she knows who Safin is now. So he gives her it as a sort of perfume. And she has to go and see Blofeld. And Daniel Craig, James Bond turns up. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time he's seen Madeline. Since the event, since the train gate, as I'd like to call it.
Yep.
And they're just about to go in, and she sprays herself with the nanobot perfume by Calvin Klein. And she chickens out and says, I can't do this. But he's already touched her wrists.
Mm-hmm.
So he's infected now.
Yes.
So then Bond gets to talk to Blofeld, and Blofeld just says, you know, I'm going to just wind you up now for a bit. You smell. You look like Sid James. The invasion was terrible.
You were overshadowed by Hugh Jackman on Broadway.
And then Bond leans into Blofeld and says, "The Blofeld, the." Sorry, die Blofeld,
yes.
Die.
Yes,
which is from one of the books, I believe.
Yes. Because no man who speaks German could ever be evil.
Exactly. And he strangles Blofeld, but it's such a... Again, I'm still recovering at this point from the funny chair, him being brought on the funny slow ski chair. And then Bond strangles him a bit, and then they turn around and they're like... Oh, and that's another thing as well. Have you noticed in this film that every time someone gives Bond any form of criticism, like Mallory coming in and saying, look, mate, you can't really strangle prisoners. Mm-hmm. He cuts them off and says, I know. He does it about three times.
Yeah, he's a bit petulant, which is where the whole Commander Bond thing comes from, doesn't it? It was like, Commander Bond, I think you'll find.
Yeah.
Yeah. He needs to get over himself.
He does, and then they turn around and Blofeld's,
Portent of Doom number 3. Mm. Now, did you see this coming, John?
No.
Interesting.
But I thought, I did have my... I don't know. Part of me, like you said earlier with Blofeld, I thought they were just going to put him back and we'll see him again one day. Because you don't necessarily murder Blofeld. He gets away, or you know, he's left for dead, thinking he's dead. Which is why Inspector, I got so angry that he was arrested. That's just, you don't arrest Blofeld. You just don't. It's like Darth Vader's about to kill Luke at the end of The Empire Strikes Back. The police come in. Darth Vader, you're under arrest for murdering lots of children 40 years ago.
But like the end of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. They exactly. Just show up.
I was only following orders. All right.
Tell it to the judge, mate. Tell it to the judge.
See you in Nuremberg. Space Nuremberg.
Space Nuremberg.
So, yeah, I didn't see him dying like this because, again, you don't see... One thing you don't see Blofeld doing is being arrested. Two, being killed. So...
Yeah, I was surprised by this, but not within the context of watching the movie first time around because, again, all the evidence was stacking up that something was going on here. That
they were wiping the slate clean.
Wiping the slate clean. They're getting to the end of it. They're drawing a line in the sand. I still didn't think that they were going to go there with Bond, but...
No.
The minute he steps into that room with Blofeld, and the minute his little mini metro window comes down, the only reason that happens
Harry Redknapp.
Is, yeah,
that's when they get him on deadline day.
Well, I've heard that Cyclops is moving from Spectre to Safin's organization. Great little player.
What do you think about the fact that Hugo Drax has turned up today on his own volition to try and sign for your team?
Terrific. Absolutely terrific.
I was trying to think of that player he kept signing over and over again. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Nico Cranchar.
There you go. Nico Cranchar's his henchman.
Nico Cranchar's his henchman. He can blast him in from 30 yards. Which he kind of does at the end. Maybe that's who kills Bond at the end. A Nico Crankshaw with a long-range hammer.
Yeah, Lukaku. Lukaku. What was his name?
Who are you talking about?
Benjani. That's the one I was thinking of.
Yes.
Sorry, we don't really talk about football on this podcast.
We absolutely shouldn't. But yeah, what was I going to say? So Blofeld, I thought, was going to be the author of all Bond's pain again, and yes, he was going to be pulling saffron strings from prison in a sort of hackneyed way. So I'm glad that they didn't do that. But the only reason that little transfer of Harry Redknapp car door window comes down is so Bond can touch him and so he can be killed. And I just thought, oh, it's a bit clumsy. And I just think, as we said earlier on, go through all that trouble to get all the rights back eventually to Spectre and Blofeld, and then that's it. 1.5 films, and it's done.
Yep.
Shame.
It is. It's a real shame. It's a real ham-fisted, badly organised shame. So Bond goes, they say to him, do you know where Madeline went? Because she ran off. And he went, yeah, I think so. And he goes to Norway. But also we should mention that he's uncovered his Aston Martin from Living Daylights, which he shouldn't own.
But he should, because he had the adventure of the Living Daylights off screen.
Off screen. Yeah. which, by the way, has the best gadgets of all the Bond cars, I think, apart from the Lotus. And he doesn't utilise them at all.
No, this is literally just a car to get him from A to B.
It really annoyed me because let's cut to the chase here. He goes to see Madeline. And it turns out she has got a daughter called Mathilde. And he instantly goes, she looks like me. And she goes, she's not yours. And I thought, how many times has that happened to him? There's lots of big-eared boys looking like Sid James running around the world.
I mean, let's be honest. Maybe not this Bond, because this Bond isn't a womanizer in the way that previous Bonds have been. But, and most people he has sex with do get killed.
Yeah.
Almost immediately afterwards. So, but you would still imagine, law of averages would suggest that he's got at least 150 kids.
Oh, easily, yeah.
So, what did you think about this?
I didn't like it. Development? It made me think of, instantly, Superman Returns.
Yeah, I can see.
I just thought, not knowing that he was going to die at the end, but I was thinking, you've kind of painted yourself in a corner here. But now knowing what happens at the end, I don't mind it so much. I think it's fine.
I don't want to sound like someone who's preserved in amber and a bit of a dinosaur when it comes to things like this. And certainly characters should be allowed to grow and to develop and to, you know, fall in love and have kids and even die. But I sometimes feel that Bond is one of those characters who should almost be exempt from all that. That exactly. He is. And maybe this is just because previously they didn't give a shit about that. And they just saw him as a character who you could pick up and then drop into another adventure. And you never really worried about his emotional life or his mental health or any of that stuff. Or whether he was truly happy. You were just there to watch a guy who was impossibly cool, go to different locations around the world, sleep with as many people as he can, kill even more people, and save the day. And Craig obviously is the first real... Well, he's not the first actor to really think about Bond in those terms, because Dalton did.
Yeah.
But he's the first one who's had the power to do something about it, and the run of films in which to do something about it. So... I'm a bit torn on it, and part of me thinks it should never happen to a character like Bond. But at the same time, it does kind of work here. I have issues with it from a logic standpoint. As in, how can Madeline, how is she possibly squirrel this kid away under the watchful eye of MI6?
In Norway.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, clearly she's not kept the kid in Norway. She must have. She must be living with Mathilde in London. So how has no one spotted this?
Yeah.
And why doesn't she tell Bond that Mathilde is hers?
His.
Yeah. She tells him it's hers. Yes, it's hers. This is a kid I found.
Just to let you know, this is mine. Okay.
Yes, I found this small child knocking around outside. Why doesn't she tell him that Mathilde is his?
But I guess because at this point she's trying to kind of thinking that he's not wanting any kind of involvement with her anymore.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense. I didn't like it. the way it's handled. But then,
cute kid though. Very cute kid.
Oh, very cute. Clearly cast because she's got his enormous blue eyes, because he says that. And she has got enormous blue eyes. And looks like St. James.
It's the cackle. The cackle sealed it.
If you got me, buddy. Yeah, so he gets a call and they're saying, you know, Logan Ash is here. And he said, I thought you were tracing him, not me. And they're like, well, we are. So he knows that Logan Ash is coming for him. Mm-hmm. So they get outside, and outside is his awesome Aston Martin from The Living Daylights, which has got snow tracks, missiles, an afterburner, and they're getting her 4x4.
True. For the world's slowest car chase.
And it just made me think of Thunderball. Maybe it's a Thunderball reference, because in that he's got the Aston Martin from Goldfinger, and he uses one gadget in it through the entire film. And in this, he's got the really cool Living Daylights car. I mean, imagine how cool it would have been if he put his skis out and just fired his afterburners. Awesome.
Would have been. It would have been amazing. No,
but he goes off in a, urban Jeep thing.
Yeah.
So they have a little car chase, which I thought was quite boring. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have to say, I thought... I think that the action in the second half of the movie, A, there's not a lot of it, and B, mm-hmm. what there is fairly humdrum and fairly repetitive. And, I've said stuff like this in the past, but, you know, I do wonder whether... Because Spectre, I felt, crowbarred stunts in for stunts' sake.
Yes,
you know, that whole sequence.
Hmm.
Yeah, the snow stuff. The plane going down the hill all felt very much like, all right, what can we do? Let's get Bond on a plane. Let's get him down a snowy landscape, going through a barn, and we'll do something with that. And which is quite often the way that these films are made, as you know, where they go, right, what can we do? What's a big action sequence? And then we'll stitch a story around it.
Famously, the opening to The Spy Who Loved Me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't get the feeling that happened here.
No.
But what I think also happened here was that whether it was Fukunaga, whether it was Broccoli and Wilson, or whether it was just the way the script naturally developed, but then Fukunaga had a hand in the script. So I get the feeling he came in and wanted to strip back a lot of the spectacle and a lot of the stunts,
mm-hmm.
A lot of the things that make Bond for me, is the stunt work. And I wonder if maybe they were a little bit cowed by the fact that, you know, since Craig came to prominence, since his movies came to prominence, the mission movies have stepped up in a really big way.
Yeah.
How can you possibly compete with a franchise where your lead character, your lead actor is literally strapping himself to a plane as it takes off?
Mm.
Or, you know, doing these insane motorcycle stunts where it's actually him on motorcycles.
Yes.
Or he's diving out of a plane doing a halo jump. How could you compete against that? So you go the other way instead, which is you have a fairly low-key car chase, or you have a fairly low-key shootout in a fairly low-key lair.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're correct. But during this fight in the woods, we get a reference to For Your Eyes Only, where Logan Ash's car crashes, mm-hmm. and he's lying under it, and the car's about to fall on him, but he can't move because his legs are broken. And then he says, what does he say? I can help you, brother. Mm-hmm. He let me out, and then he said, I had a brother. His name was Felix. And he pushes the car and it crushes him.
His name was Oberhauser.
Mm. And then Felix was the other one. Oh, he's dead. It was a bit like Bread. We had lots of brothers and sisters all living in the same house. And we had Granddad next door, played by Bernard Lee.
Bond, have you finished that mission? Because I haven't had a put in.
I've been annoying everyone with that voice. So Logan Ash is dead, but when he gets back to where he's sort of hidden Madeline and Mathilde. Safin has taken them both, even though, and this really annoys me, he doesn't care for Mathilde. Because at one point he just, we'll get there. I need to understand that. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
So Bond is walking down the hill and upturns. And Nomi then turns up in her car, which I read the other day has been computer enhanced. Because
really?
When they filmed this, the Aston Martin model they were using has since been upgraded. So they used the upgrade and they CGI'd it in.
That's clever.
Yeah.
Look at all the things they can do.
Look at all that. Yeah, they can't do a script. So they then go back. They go back together, and she's and we find out that Bond is now been reinstated as a 00. And yep. Also, there's a line here that it's a bit earlier on, actually, that where Nomi says that she shows everybody what happens if you touch someone who's been infected with this virus. And she says, this is what happened to the people who had contact with the corpse. who's doing that? Again, another Savile reference. So she's basically a bit peeved because we don't know what number he's been reinstated to. And he says, it's just a number. And then when they're about to go on this mission together, she says, I want you to be the 007. And I thought, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
What's the point of this moment?
That felt forced to me.
It removes her of all her agency, literally.
Yeah. We haven't talked about that, actually, John, because we were skipping daintily through the Jamaica section. Mm. I think Nomi's great in this movie. I think it's a really... I think... making 007 not just a woman but a black woman pisses off all the right people. So I thought it was a really lovely lovely way of acknowledging that there are people who are campaigning for Bond to be something other than a white guy. So you can have your cake and eat it by having Bond be a white guy, and then taking 007 and making that more progressive, and giving it to a black woman. I thought it was tremendous. I thought it was a lovely touch. And I think she's great in the role. She's really, really great in the role.
She doesn't have enough to do, but she's great.
Precisely. Doesn't have remotely enough to do. I read a tweet that said if you took Nomi out of the movie, it wouldn't affect the movie one iota. I don't think that's true.
No.
First of all, she's the one who tracks Logan Ash to Norway. But it's true. In Cuba, she is thwarted. So... Yes. She doesn't really get anywhere with that. And obviously she helps Bond out at the end. She kills the Russian scientist whose name I will never, ever be able to pronounce. So thank you for that.
Obruchev.
That's the one. Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a lot of potential in this character, and I really hope they can find a way to carry on with her. Maybe a carry-on with Daniel Craig as Sid James.
It's his destiny.
Yeah, but presumably she finishes the movie as 007. Presumably she's reinstated, but... You know, there's all this talk about, oh, did you think they would retire the number? You know, oh, it's just a number. It doesn't really mean anything. And then by giving it that weird, they give it that sort of weird weight, don't they? The weird meaning by having her clumsily kind of go, oh, no, you should be 007 for this.
Really
why should he be
me.
007 for this?
Yeah. He's freelancing. What did he give his old number back for?
Yeah.
He's already, you know, gone off in a flounce and resigned. He resigned on his first mission, the twat.
He's constantly resigning. What's he doing?
No, he just meets a lady. This is not Bond. Bond doesn't meet a lady and they go, oh, I'm going to resign. I'm going to go live with you. I've just met you. I know, but I love you.
I want to be with you. He's got a resignation letter set in his template. He's always sending it. Bond's
like
resigned again.
The beginning of The Spy Who Loved Me. He opens the door and she goes, but James, I love you. And I need you. He should then close the door and go, I know and I love you. I'm going to stay. The end.
Yeah, I've got to go. I've got to pen a resignation letter.
Oh, my God. They get in this little fancy plane submarine thing I like. But it's not real. That's the thing I don't like about it. Does that make sense?
Oh, it's made up.
Yeah, it's a CG creation. The whole thing about Bond is they find a cool vehicle. Like in Octopussy with your little plane that flies out of a horse's bum. And, you know, they always find that, like Little Nelly in You Only Live Twice, all these sort of things. And in this one, it's like, well, here's this plane submarine thing. And then it takes off and it's CG. And I'm like, couldn't it have been a real thing?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Mm. No, that's fair. That's fair.
Because there's a lot of stunts in this that are real stunts. But I noticed, watching it again, I did notice how awkward. You know, in Skyfall when... Bond's doing the motorbike chase at the beginning in Turkey, and they've superimposed Daniel Craig's head on that man. And he looks like Frankenstein's monster. They've done it again in this one. It is quite funny. He does look like a bit of a monster when you superimpose
In the chase at the beginning.
Yeah, when they superimpose his head on with a grimace. Anyway, so they fly off on this plane thing that turns into a submarine and goes in the water. And then they arrive at Safin's lair on an island. Now, at this point, I'm thinking, good, bad, he's got a lair on an island. you did this previously in Skyfall. You touched on it. You were like, oh, we're going to do a proper Bond lair, but you stayed there for like 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's good. We've got a proper climax on an island with a lair. And then they use the Q-dar. And they kind of go their separate ways. And then meanwhile, Saffine is taking Mathilde and Madeleine around the poison garden. And I'm thinking, oh, poison garden, that's cool. Never gets used. Never gets utilized.
No.
Could have had a big thing in there about, you know, you can't touch this, you can't walk through these. I don't know, just something. It felt like production. Yeah. It felt like Cat Adam for Cat Adam's sake, this film, I'm afraid.
The end sequence, I mean. I thought the end was really disappointing for a number of reasons. And again, I must stress that, you know, I liked the movie a lot more second time around. This is not a diss of the movie as a whole at all. I think the first hour in particular is as good as anything in the Craig oeuvre. But for a movie that's been so colourful up until London, really.
Yeah.
And then the palette becomes just more drab.
Yeah, it does.
I read a really great piece this week about the colour timing and the colour grading in Skyfall and Spectre and the differences in approach.
Oh, yes, I saw that as well.
It was on Twitter. Yeah, yes. Really, really good about the differences between Deakins and Hoyte van Hoytema and how Spectre is just basically monochromatic and a bit drab to look at. And this movie isn't, you know, everything has a different color palette. There's pops of color. You know, Cuba is very blue. There's, you know, the Felix's death is prefigured by the, you know, there's this drenched in red, that whole sequence. If you watch that sequence, it's drenched in red. And it really pops. Then it gets to London and becomes a little bit more real world and grounded, I guess.
Yeah.
And then you get to this island. And everything's grey.
Mm.
And I just felt that we needed something more. The film becomes more serious and somber as it goes on. Obviously deliberate, given where it's going to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just needed a real pop of personality, because you're not getting that.
No.
From your bad guy.
All his films do have third act. All the Craig films have something in common, which is they have third act problems. Even Casino Royale's got a third act problem.
Even Casino Royale has, yeah, absolutely. Mm. I agree. I mean, the disposing of the chiffre, even though it's, you know, it's something that is laid down by the source material, just means that the third act feels a little bit like an afterthought.
Yeah, and that house sinking fight is just really boring.
Mm.
Yeah. And yeah, they've all got that in common, and this is no different, I'm afraid. And then they go round Saffin's lab. I like the visual of the water with the lights in it. You know, I don't know what they're doing. Are they farming nanobots? I don't know what they're doing.
It's a very good question. It's never made clear. And there is part of me that wonders if things were changed and whether surgery took place on this film. But, you know, until people speak about it, we may never know. And even then, we may never know. There may be things about this movie that don't come out about the making of the movie, because obviously, you know, COVID hit.
Yeah.
And maybe COVID forced them to kind of tamper with it and tinker with it, and maybe there were certain things in there they thought might have been too close to home. So I don't know, it's all speculation on my part, but it feels to me that there are elements of this movie. The first hour is really solid and really locked in, and everything after that feels a little bit more nebulous, like they were trying to maybe paper over some cracks.
I think so. I'd also like to know which sequence it was that nearly blew up Pinewood.
Yeah, very good point.
Yeah, because there was a whole thing about, wasn't there, about how it did severe damage to the 007 stage. And I can't think of an explosion than this that big.
That's a really good point. Mm. Really good point.
Yeah. Unless it was another cut bit. I don't know. But
yeah.
So yeah, they go around, and then to cut a long story short, he goes up and he finds Saffin, who's sitting there with Mathilde. And this bit's quite good, I thought. Even though, again, we don't know anything about Saffin, but Bond does that thing where he insults him and then does that, oh, I'm really sorry. Really, I really apologise. But he's secretly getting a gun out of his trousers, I think.
Yeah, it's his penis gun.
And then he kills everyone in the room. Saffin disappears with Mathilde. And then he's walking down a secret corridor holding her, and she's like, oh, I dropped my rabbit. And then he's just like, oh, fuck off then. I thought, what was the point of that? He literally just goes, go on then, and then walks off.
Yeah, she bites him. She bites him, and he's like,
yeah.
He's like, I'm not cut out for this parenthood stuff.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, it's hard to say exactly what they were thinking of.
His henchman should have been super nanny.
Yes, that's precisely it. but I don't know, I wasn't a huge fan of that exchange. I mean, it's not too far away from, we're not so different, you and I. I mean,
true.
Those words aren't said, but they're
he does say that intimated speech about both in love with Madeline.
Yes.
Both killers. It's like looking in the mirror.
But only not.
Mm.
Yeah.
And looking at the man in the mirror. No. No. This isn't a Michael Jackson biopic.
Oh, it should be. It should be.
It's got elements that could be.
There are. There really are. Yeah. And... yeah, I just think it's a little bit hackneyed.
It is.
I love that Bond kills all his henchmen and doesn't try and shoot Safin first. I know he's holding a child, but Bond's a good enough shot. We've established this. He could have taken out Safin easily.
But him and Madeline find Mathilde. She's hiding under a table. And then he goes, right, well, we can get out of here now. All I got to do is call in a strike because all this stuff's here to make the poison.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes and opens the blast doors. Open the blast door, open the blast door. And, there's quite a funny bit there where he's Q's talking to him through how to do it, and he's done it by the time he's finished talking. That's quite fun.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And then he's they're all set to leave, and he's just walking out, and suddenly the doors start closing again. And he's like, no! Oh,
what is going on?
And then we get his confrontation with Safin again, who shoots him.
Yes.
And, again, a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, it felt to me a little bit like, well, A, how does Safin get down to the poison garden so quickly after shutting down the, after closing the blast doors? But then again, it's his lair. I'm sure he knows lots of little secret routes. But it just felt to me a little bit like we don't know this character well enough. They don't have a connection. We haven't had those delicious Bond, villain Bond exchanges that we often do.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it's a little bit like the Logan Ash thing. You needed to make Logan Ash more formidable in order to justify him taking out Felix Leiter. And I think there's a feeling of, oh, this is the guy? Because at this point, I was convinced. At this point, it was already beginning to dawn on me that, oh, they're going to kill Bond. They're going to go down there.
Same.
Doing that route. And the thing that really clinched it for me, I know I've spoken to people who were way ahead of me by this point, and who figured it out way before this shot. But it's the shot whenever he says goodbye to Madeline and Mathilde, and they're on the boat with Nomi, and they're bathed in this gorgeous beatific glow, and that's the glow bestowed upon characters who the main character's never going to see again. So that's the moment that they're going to live long in his. That's going to be the last thing that goes through his head, other than, you know, the missile towards the end of the film. And so by this point, it was like, oh, no, he's going towards his death now, isn't he? That's what's going to happen here. And then, of course, he gets shot 4 or 5 times by Safin.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, Safin's the guy who's going to take down Bond? Really? Mm. This guy? And I don't think that he earned it.
No. No, I agree. Well, while we're talking about death as well, we should point out that Nomi kicked the Russian scientist into the swimming pool of nanobots because he was being racist.
Yes, he was one of those people. He was a bit like the Kevin Elton character in Alan Partridge, wasn't it? Because he starts off and he's, I quite like this guy. He's quite likable. Yeah. And then and you hang out with him for a little bit, and then and then he unleashes the racism, and then you slowly back away.
Yeah, he's from Acton.
And kick him into a poison garden.
Yeah, and he melts.
And he melts, which is what should happen to all racists, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Literally and figuratively.
Mm-hmm. But mainly literally. I'd be quite happy. Yeah.
Me too. So Bond is going back. He gets shot by Safin, as you say, and then they're having a little scuffle, and Safin scratches him in the face with his jar of nanobots, which it turns out is nanobots that will kill Madeline and anyone associated with Madeline.
Madeline.
So Bond's cock should fall off.
Instant cock rot, Mr. Bond.
And his taint.
Or whatever I'm from. Yes. Yeah. Oh, poor old Bond. Poor old Bond. Yeah,
so he realizes it's quite a nice bit of acting where he realizes what's happened, and then he just stands up, and then just as Safin's still mouthing off, he just tow. It's quite good.
Yeah.
It's another I like a Bond cold kill. My favourite cold kill of that Bond does, fact fans, is in The World Is Not Enough, when Elektra's doing the old "you wouldn't kill me" or, and he just goes tow.
Yes. Yeah, that's a cracker bit.
Shut up.
That is, yeah, it's good. Although we do not obviously condone violence against women.
No, God no. Mm. No, she wasn't merely a woman. She was an evil woman.
Evil,
an like evil Jeff Lynne warned us about.
So, if only I'd listened to Jeff Lynne.
I love your Brosnan. I do love your Brosnan. So with Safin dead, he then goes back, he opens up the shutters, and then he asks to speak to Madeline.
Madeline
says, "Look, I'm a bit fucked. I can't come home.
Look, those parts you ordered, they're not in for a couple of weeks."
I think I'm going to stay. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Oh, well, the baby is, you know, Mathilde is yours." And he's like, "Well, I know. She looks like Sid James." And she's like, "Oh, James." And he's like, "Yeah." And does one of them say, "We have all the time in the world" again?
He says it to her. She's going, "Oh man, come on, and you know, I've got so much to live for." And he goes, "No, it's okay, you have all the time in the world."
There you go. And then he blows up.
He does. And or does he?
Like, well, I've had lots of people DM me with like theories going, "Oh, well, maybe the nanobots will rebuild him." And I thought, no, he's dead. He's dead. He ain't getting out of that one.
Yeah, it feels to me, because I was thinking as the missiles were coming in, I was thinking, all right, they're going to show this from a distance. It's going to be a very, very, very long shot.
Yeah.
So we don't actually see Bond being, you know, smashed to pieces by
like your Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. They're gonna leave some room, and then it's like, oh no, he's been engulfed by a wall of fire. I think even Bond may struggle to get back from this one.
You cut to Q and he says, "Oh, it looks like Bond fixed his autopilot without me knowing."
And you even, and I only noticed this last night in the second go, but after the missiles hit, you see Bond's vital signs go down to zero on Q's little computer wall.
That's
and
Q's right, like,
"Oh, sad. Oh, no. My Q vital signs have gone down." And
then Michael Caine goes back to dinner at his favourite place in Italy. He sees Christian Bale and Anne Hathaway. And then the next table, Daniel Craig sitting there having a pint.
Yeah, that's precisely what happens.
Where are all these people coming from?
I failed you.
The restaurant, the people who've just recently died in mysterious circumstances.
Am I dead? I may be dead as well.
There's Bobby Ewing. That's one for the kids there.
I've just seen Sean Connery for the first time in 2 years.
That is a very good impression. So then MI6, M, Moneypenny, Nomi, Q, and Tanner, they have a little drink.
Oh, Tanner.
Rory Kinnear, really, he was in the official No Time to Die podcast, and he's like, "Yes, Mallory's back, and, you know, blah, 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 blah." And I thought, you've had nothing to do in this at all. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Tell you what, though, he gets more to do in the last half hour of the movie than Moneypenny does.
That's true. Yeah, Moneypenny.
She's sitting in the background doing nothing. He's at least kind of processing the information and relaying it to Mallory. Whereas Moneypenny's just like, I guess I got to do that one thing in that one movie three films ago. So that's fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, women can't have everything, Chris. I'm sorry. You could have a double O, but one of you has to be a secretary. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, there's a quota. There's a quota in place in these movies, and that's what you're saying. Okay, I'm not saying it, but you know that's what you're saying, and I want to make that absolutely clear.
As Roger Moore said in the film Folks, women's lib a giant step backwards. So he reads out a Graham Greene quote.
Mm-hmm.
It basically goes, Do the funky... Oh, sorry, that's Graham Garden. Not Graham Garden, Graham Green. And they cheers an imaginary glass. Not an imaginary glass, a real glass. An imaginary cheers to dead Bond.
Yes.
And then Madeleine and Mathilde
Madeleine
are driving on the road. And I think this is a lovely little end line.
Yes.
So I'm going to tell you a story. And she's like, oh, yeah, where's my iPad? And she says, I'll tell you a story about a man called Bond, James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And then yes. Louis Armstrong kicks in.
Yes.
Which is weird because he's been dead for years.
Yes, he pops up from the back seat.
He comes out of the glove box. Yes. No, the song kicks in. It's lovely. But when I, on my first viewing, I was livid. Because I just thought, you haven't earned this.
Mm.
And this song belongs to another film. It's a crucial factor of another film. Where this song, being a factor of that film, is earned by a montage. And he didn't even have a montage in this.
No, he needs a montage.
Rocky had a montage.
What he needed was, Rocky IV had like 25 of them. Fewer now in the director's cut, I'm told.
Yeah,
but yeah. What it needed was an Armageddon-style life flashing before his eyes montage as the wall of fire hits him. I would have been quite happy to see that.
Like the bit in The Magic Secret Service when he opens the drawer and pulls out every prop and you get a bit of music from that film. You should look in his wallet and there'd be a photo of all the Felixes. It'd be like one of those things with the credit cards. You know, in the 80s, everyone had that credit card thing would fall out of their wallet. It'd be that bit of a different picture of every Felix. Oh,
that would be amazing. Or if his dying thoughts had been a sort of a low, low style, you have been watching.
Yeah.
Series of credits.
Yeah.
You have been watching John Terry. You've been watching Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah. Not that John Terry, obviously.
Not that John Terry, no. But maybe that John Terry also, because
it's almost certain.
It's almost certain Bond's a Chelsea fan. It feels that way.
Feels that way, doesn't it? Well, there you go. And I was worried that it was going to say, James. You know, as we mentioned earlier, I was worried it was going to say, James Bond will not return. I genuinely was.
I thought
maybe that's it. Maybe they've just had enough. But then I started thinking, this is their only baby, isn't it, Eon? Unless they sell the rights to a big company, which they may well do at one point, I don't know. But from the No Time to Die podcast I listened to, it sounds like there's still a lot of family involved in making these films. I think Michael G. Wilson's son is heavily involved, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe Greg's his name. Yeah, and he's being groomed to, I think, maybe take over one day from his pop.
That's good, because I was worried that it would be like, we'll sell it to Apple now, because there's been rumours for years that Apple want to buy it, isn't there? And things like that.
And I think they see themselves as the keepers of the kingdom, and I can't see them ever relinquishing control. I think they'll always want to team up, and I don't think they would ever go streaming. I think they'll always want to team up with a theatrical giant that can give them the marketing spend and the amount of screens that they feel it needs.
Because Amazon have bought MGM, haven't they, now?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, but Universal still distribute it here. So, and that's another thing I want to talk about. In the US, it's not distributed by Universal, so you don't get the cool gun barrel effect that we get here.
Oh.
Because out here, we get the Universal globe, which then goes white.
Right.
It starts the gun barrel. But in America, it's MGM, so it just goes from MGM to the gun barrel.
Well, that's interesting.
Sorry, American friends, you lose.
That's it.
You lose.
It's over for you, America. How do you feel now about? Because I think it's Craig nails it. I think it's filmed really beautifully. I love the end. You're right. You know, Madeline saying Bond, James Bond to their daughter is a lovely touch. Also, the first time she speaks to Mathilde in the film in English.
Yes.
Which is interesting. Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, it finishes on the gun barrel. It finishes on that sort of inversion of the gun barrel with the car in the tunnel. So it's a really nicely thought out closing shot.
It is. He's a great director, I have to say.
Yeah. I don't think we've talked enough about Fukunaga and how much he can, how well this movie is directed. And I think there's, you know, it's very, very solid stuff, and at times I would say inspired.
Yeah, brilliant.
But how do you feel about the? Have you reconciled with Bond's death now?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, but I'm a bit upset about it because next year is the 60th anniversary, and it'll be like the end of the Phantom Menace. We'll all be round Qui-Gon Jinn's flaming corpse celebrating 60 years of Bond. I'm a bit annoyed about that, because with the anniversary next year, I don't really want it to be in doubt as to what's going to happen next. You'd rather have for the 60th, maybe for the 60th anniversary, they'll say, here's the new James Bond. That would make sense.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say the new James Bond, I would be surprised if the new James Bond hasn't already been chosen.
Oh,
I'd be surprised. Here. Yeah, there's someone's listening to this right now. Henry Golding or whomever is listening to this and going, hee, it's me.
I can say for a fact, a lot of people are like, oh, it'll be, you know, there was that rumor for about a week where they're like, Tom Hardy is the next Bond. No way.
Yeah.
It won't be anyone established in any sense. Like a lot, I'm a fan of Henry Cavill. I know no one else is, but I am. But I know for a fact he will not be James Bond because he's got too many pies going on. And I think they want someone who is not very well known and someone they can push through a ceiling, if you like, not literally, or maybe literally.
Well, if you cast someone who's unknown, you could take all sorts of liberties with them they won't complain. So you could push them through a ceiling or throw them through a window. So yeah. I'd be okay with that.
I'm fine with that. They literally did that with Craig. They threw him through a wall. So
they did. Yeah, until he got more powerful and stopped doing it. Stop that. Stop throwing me through walls. Stop breaking my legs.
Also, these people are cheaper. And I think
initially, at least.
What I would say is I'd like someone to do a Bond film every 2 years, please.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want this waiting 6 years for a Bond film thing, please.
No,
I'm fed up with that.
There have been, 15 years. You know, Craig is now the longest serving Bond actor, I believe. I think he surpassed Moore by a year, right?
He has, but he didn't make as many films as Connery or Moore. So.
Precisely. So he's made five in 15 years. And, you know, as you say, this is the biggest tool in Eon's bag of peas. Yeah. So, you know, you'd think that they would want to make one of these every 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
We've talked in the past about the possibilities of an expanded universe and doing that thing where Nomi gets a film and where, you know, Blofeld gets an origin movie and Q gets his own movie and all that sort of stuff. I don't know whether they're going to go down that route because I think that would ultimately dilute the impact of Bond. But it would be nice to see them step up the rate of production a little bit on this one. Whoever is Bond 26 onwards, one every 2 or 3 years would be great.
Yes.
But I'm a bit like you. I'm a purist and a traditionalist, which means I'm a dinosaur who's set in my ways. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time for me to get over this. I was a bit like you. I was actively furious about it when I first saw the movie.
Yeah.
And I've since been talked off the ledge. If anyone listens to the Empire spoiler special for this, literally the first hour is me going, but you can't kill Bond. And then younger people who aren't set in their ways talk me off the ledge and go, no, it's okay, Chris. It's okay. It's fine. It's fine. He's not real. You can kill him. And so I kind of come to terms with it a little bit. And I've been thinking about it an awful lot over the last few weeks about, you know, what it says about me and my relationship with, you know, fictional characters and how sacrosanct they are and how untouchable they are. And I'm a little bit more at peace with it. One of the reasons why I still have a slight problem with it is that I don't think it was inevitable. And I think if you have a situation where you're killing off a major character like this in pop culture, it has to feel inevitable from a storytelling point of view. And it doesn't have to feel, it shouldn't feel like you can detect the hand of the storyteller pushing this character towards death. You shouldn't have to detect the hand of Daniel Craig, who I'm guessing clearly came back for a fifth film and going, all right, I'll do it. But I want to make sure that there won't be a sixth.
Yes.
So you have to kill him. That's what's going to happen. And I feel you can feel that a little bit with this.
Definitely.
Logan, for example, you know, Wolverine killing Wolverine in Logan, again, going back to Jim Mangold, feels really organic, feels really inevitable, feels stitched into the fabric of the movie. Tony Stark in Endgame feels like, it doesn't feel inevitable, but it feels right and it feels
earned. It's thematically rewarded. Rewarding.
It's thematically rewarded, and he's done something so monumental that it almost warrants that payoff in a way. I don't think that's the case with this Bond here.
No,
he saved the world. Okay,
Yeah, like you say, I was angry about this when I first saw it. I think all I tweeted was "nah," because I didn't want to get into it with anybody.
I remember that.
Yeah,
I was really keen to see what you thought, and then then you just I didn't DM you or anything. Just thought I'm going to wait. I'm going to monitor John's Twitter, and then "nah" just came in, and I could almost hear it in Dalton voice as well.
I wanted it to be in a Dalton voice, but I thought it wouldn't come across, so I just put "nah."
Yeah, no. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. Because yeah, I was obviously getting lots of Bond fans were, some were up in it, like Neil Alcock, The Incredible Suit, were really, really up in the film. And then there were others like you and people like Stephen Carty who were not. And I was kind of in the middle.
But then I went to see it again, and I just it was a nice experience. I took my 10-year-old son to see it, and it was a proper bonding thing, literally. Ha-ha. And I thought of it more as a film than as a Bond film, and I really enjoyed it. And my son really enjoyed it, even though he was a bit sad about Bond dying at the end.
Yeah.
So I've got mixed feelings on it. I think it's another one. I'm sad to say that certainly since Spectre, it's another one where I'm probably not going to buy it and add it to my collection. Just because I feel like I've seen it twice now and I'm kind of done. If it's cheap on streaming one day, I might get it.
But you might get it, yeah.
It's not one I want to revisit and revisit. It's not a caper like all the others are. And unfortunately, that's the case with most Craig films. It's not one where I want to dip back in again over and over again.
Yeah.
Like with Your License to Kills or your Spy Who Loved Me, where I keep going back to them.
Yeah, I think Casino Royale takes up that box for me. I think when you look back at
his
run.
Up to a point,
now,
yeah.
Yeah, well, I love that film. I think it's top 3 for me. And I know you disagree on this, but I think Skyfall is also terrific. So I think if you look back in his run, I think he's pretty much. I was hoping that this would be another great, so that he could have his run of 5 and do 3, you know, arguable, but 3 classics and 2 kind of clunkers.
Yeah.
And I feel this isn't it's in neither camp. It's
I agree.
It's not terrible. It's well made. It's well written. It has, you know, they knew what the end was, and they moved towards it, and it all feels of a piece. But as a Bond film, I think it doesn't quite deliver the elements I wanted from a Bond film. Yeah. I need that spectacle. I need the glitz. I need the glamour, and it just becomes just a little bit more drab as it goes on. As I said, but you know, I still think this is a really bold creative swing, and I think going forward, one of the things that Bond films have lacked is a sense of stakes and a sense of danger, where you can get, you know, you can tie Bond up to a laser machine, you can throw him into any scenario, and you just know that he's going to walk away from it. And in one stroke, they've removed that and they've planted that seed of doubt. And so now we could be going into any situation where, say, for example, it is a Henry. It is Henry Cavill or it's Henry Golding who gets announced, and they do 3 movies, and they might do the same thing again. They might kill Bond at the end of that and then just cast another actor, and then they might give that actor just 1 movie, and then they might, you know, and so what it does, it refreshes it and gives it that sense of edge that it has been lacking for so long.
I just think my problem with this, last thing I'll say on it, is just that it felt like this film and a couple of the films are just, from what I've understood with the behind the scenes, that Becoming Bond documentary that came out on Apple recently, it just felt like, here's a man who doesn't want to be James Bond, who is not interested in anything James Bond does, and wants to mould it to his own will and change the character. And then when he's had enough, is just like, well, I'll kill him off. It just feels like they, for the first time, were dictated to by the actor. Can you imagine Connery or more doing that, you know, saying, no, I don't want any gadgets, no, I don't want you to have the Lotus, I just want to have a family film about my personal problems. It's just like, no, that wouldn't have sold tickets back then. And it annoys me that that's how we're having to go. It's like we're having to leave the cinema now and go, wow, what a thoughtful piece. No, I want to come out and I want to high kick ninjas in the car park from the way home.
True. Yeah, so, which, but again, John, I mean, I think that means it's a really bold choice. I think Craig is more invested and more of a Bond fan than I think you might suspect. I think he is. I think for him, he is the first actor, and again, we've said this in the past, but he's the first Bond actor who has had the time and the authority and the influence within the creative team at Eon to do this. You know, and he's also one of the first Bonds who has gone into their final film knowing it's going to be their final film. You know, that wasn't the case with Dalton. It wasn't the case with Brosnan. It wasn't the case with Lazenby. It was the case with Moore, but he wasn't. And Connery, yeah. But they weren't interested in Bond as a character. They were they were just playing him in adventures, and there was, you know. So I think it's admirable in a way that Craig has imposed this arc upon it. But it doesn't feel inevitable to me. It feels that, you know, whenever he gets wounded and he's making his phone call to Madeline, that he still has time to get away and get out and to live. And yes, you could argue that he'll live, but it'll be a kind of purgatory because he'll be unable to. He'll be, he'll be having his balls slowly stitched together again. And that's another thing. Surely he can't have kids again after what the Chief does to him in Casino Royale. Oh, exactly. I would absolutely get a DNA test. But he, you know, he's just reconnected with the woman that we're told he loves, and he's just discovered that he has a daughter. And rather than, yeah, I know that, you know, it wouldn't be a great life not being able to, you know, have physical contact with them, but he would still be able to watch Mathilde growing up.
Could be a boy in a bubble suit type thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Get one of those, like, rubber things. Yeah. But he just bounces around. Get them all in it. Why not? So
if he'd have had one of those rubber things, Mathilde wouldn't exist, you know what I mean?
Hey! And Q is a genius. And Q is basically just like, you tell me Q couldn't have found out a way around Heracles sooner rather than later?
Yes, just like COVID. Wait for the science to catch up.
Yeah,
don't blow yourself up.
So I think Bond's a bloody coward. He deserved to die.
I agree. And on that note, Chris Hewitt, thank you so much for allowing me to have my midlife crisis.
I think we both talked each other down off a ledge here, John.
I think we did. I feel a lot better about it now. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world, and if that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way will find us with the care of the world far behind us. Nothing more, nothing less, only love.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.